Wisconsin's business leaders are generally in agreement that the state of our economy is strong and there's reason for optimism this year. But don't close the book entirely. There are caveats, and we'll go sector by sector as we look at Wisconsin's economy here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. How do you think the Wisconsin economy is doing? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Last week, we heard from lawmakers on both sides of the aisle give their assessment on the health of our economy following Governor Tony Evers' State of the State address. Here is Assembly Speaker Robin Voss in the Republican response to the State of the State.
Wisconsin families now have the lowest tax burden in nearly 50 years. By any metric, Wisconsin is in great shape, and that's why economists agree that the economy is in the best shape it's been in decades.
Well, let's go to an economist. Steve Deller is a professor and community development economist in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics at UW-Madison and UW Extension. Steve, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Well, you just heard Speaker Voss saying there that the economy is in great shape. So are you among the economists who feel that Wisconsin's economy is in the healthiest place it's been in decades?
Well, it depends on how you define economic health. If you look at the traditional measures like employment and unemployment, Wisconsin is doing very well. But if you look at things like gross state product, which is kind of akin to gross domestic product, Wisconsin is actually growing at this at the slowest rate of the when compared to the neighboring areas. Also, if you look at the quality of some of the jobs that are being generated, some of these are fairly low-paying jobs. So you can actually paint the story both ways, but generally the economy is doing okay.
Basically, what indicators you decide to put in your mix is really how your outlook is on the economy?
Exactly.
So could Wisconsin's economy be slowing down in any way relate to an R word, recession, or is that far afield?
Well, you have to realize that the Wisconsin economy tends to follow the national economy. We tend to kind of lead the national economy into recessions because of our dependence on manufacturing. We tend to lag out of coming out of recessions. So if you look at what's forecasted for the national economy, there's very little indication that we're going to go into a recession, but there's a lot of indicators that we're going to go into slowdown. And there's one indicator in particular, it has to do with the interest rates, that suggests that this time next year we might be in a recession.
Interest rates, do you see them inching up?
Interest rates are going to be going up, partially for two reasons. One is the Federal Reserve Bank has kind of made the policy decision that we need to up interest rates. And one of the reasons they're doing that is because if we do go into a recession, they need to have the flexibility to be able to adjust interest rates down. If they're already low, then they really have very little flexibility in what they're going to do. The second thing is that for the second year in a row, the U.S. Treasury is going to have to incur $1 trillion in debt. So the government is stepping into the financial markets, the bond markets, and essentially is creating a lot of demand for debt, and that's going to drive interest rates up. But again, it's going to hinge on what the Federal Reserve decides to do in terms of how they respond to that.
It's been a decade since the Great Recession struck. An economist from the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, a progressive policy institute, said last year that at least in employment and family income, Wisconsin's economy has finally meaningfully recovered. So do you think that we have fully recovered from the Great Recession?
I think we have. I think that one of the things that we're starting to see, which is a fairly positive, is that wages are starting to be bid up a little bit. So that's taking some of the pressure off of the low wage paying jobs that we're generating. So in that regard, it's a positive. Now, kind of the textbook scenario is that when you start to see wages go up, you got to keep a real close eye on inflation. But the forecast, the national forecast, are that the inflation rate's going to tick up just a little bit, but stay basically flat. So right now, from that angle, it looks okay.
What happens if we raise the minimum wage?
Well, it depends on where you raise it. If you raise the minimum wage in a place like a Madison or the suburbs of Milwaukee, it really won't have that much of an effect because those wages are already reflected. But if you start to raise minimum wages in places like, say, a Platteville, or more rural communities. A lot of those rural communities are really dependent on small businesses. A lot of those small businesses simply cannot afford to pay those higher wages. You also have to look at cost of living. $15 an hour is very different in Madison than it is, say, in Superior.
Talking with Steve Deller, he's a professor and community development economist in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics at UW-Madison and UW Extension. We're checking in on Wisconsin's economy as we look ahead in 2019. Are you feeling positive about Wisconsin's economic outlook this year? How do you feel it's doing right now? Economists say it's generally in good shape, but does that play out where you are? Join in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's bring in Rich now, joining us from Rhinelander. Hi, Rich.
Good morning. Simple question. When doing an assessment of a state's economy, does one take into consideration its transportation system and its ability to pay for its road system?
I think that's an excellent point. When we led in with Speaker Voss's comments about taxes being the lowest in 50 years, you know, the note that I jotted down to myself is, at what cost? And I think you identified the cost. It's essentially, we've been so focused on lowering taxes, that we have lost sight of the services like roads, education, some of our natural resources that those taxes help pay for. I think that in the short term, the roads are not going to be a problem, but I think long term, it's going to become a serious problem.
Which is where you have to find the money in the coffers to be able to pay for those roads.
Exactly. And this is a trap that a lot of local governments fall into, is that when you look at their expenditures, other than schools, when you look at their expenditures, roads tend to be a big ticket item. So when they're in fiscal stress, the first thing they look at is cutting back on roads. And the engineering is such that if you delay maintenance on roads, it becomes very expensive to repair it. It's like home maintenance. If you defer, you know, replacing that roof that needs to be replaced, you're going to end up having to spend a lot more money in the long term.
Well, let's look at what sectors you're going to be seeing job growth in the coming year compared to last year. You know, manufacturing was going gangbusters last year. Where are we with construction now?
I think that we're actually doing okay that way. But again, if we start to go into a recession or we slow down, a lot of that's going to be picked up in the manufacturing sector. That's why Wisconsin tends to lead the country going into recessions. The Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce does a survey of 200 CEOs around the state. And one of the issues that they raise that's a source of concern is trade policy. And when you look at Wisconsin, that can really have a very large impact, particularly when you look at agriculture. And agriculture is going into the fourth or fifth year of poor performance. Part of that's uncertainty over trade policy.
We're taking a look at the economic forecast for Wisconsin with Steve Deller as our guide. He is a professor and community development economist in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics at UW-Madison and UW Extension. Last year, the state's two largest economic sectors, manufacturing and construction, were going strong. Will that trend continue? And what do you see in the economy where you are? The number is 800-642-1234. What do you think still needs to improve as far as jobs, pay, and the business climate? Are you a farmer who's worried that tariffs could make or break you this year? What are you hoping to see come out of Congress or the legislature to keep you afloat? Call in 800-642-1234. We'll get back to the conversation in just a minute on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. It is the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The national jobless rate was at 3.9% in December. Wisconsin's unemployment rate is 3%, and our neighbor Iowa boasts the lowest unemployment rate in the country at 2.4% last month. So what is Wisconsin's job forecast in 2019? We're getting a state economic forecast here on the morning show. Are you feeling positive about Wisconsin's economic outlook this year? How do you feel it's doing right now? Economists say Wisconsin is moving in the right direction, but are you seeing that where you are? We're at 800-642-1234. Steve Deller is our guide. He is a professor and community development economist in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics at UW-Madison and UW Extension. Let's go to the phones now and bring in Gary in Iron River. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, folks. I'd like to go back to the tax issue in Wisconsin. While relatively to our past situation, we are perhaps lower, or not perhaps, are lower, but when we look relatively to the states around us and the states in the country, we're amongst the highest taxes. Kiplinger recently said that we're the 10th worst state to retire in from a tax perspective. We've got a very high top income tax rate. And with the federal law changes, many people that are paying that rate will see an overall tax burden increase. We have amongst the highest gas tax rates in the area and high in the country as well, yet we can't manage our roads, and other states can with similar tax rates.
And Gary,
it seems to me we need to be working on how to improve efficiency in the state government and how to do more with less, because it seems like we're not doing as much with our money as other states are doing.
Gary, they're saying do more with less, Steve Deller.
That is a fundamental question, and this is something that we struggle with. Part of it is we believe in local control. Philosophically, that's kind of a statement that we have. The thing is that creates a lot of small units of government, where you have, town governments, municipal governments, county governments, and we have this tradition of being able to go to those town meetings and have that connection with our. So in one regard, that's a very effective way of putting local government structure together. The downside is that's not very cost effective. And I think that we're seeing some of that that play out here. I would challenge a little bit the notion that Wisconsin is still one of the highest tax states in the country. I think if you'd said that 10 years ago, I probably would have agreed with you. But I think that we've really gone down in terms of the level of taxes. But you also have to look at the cost of having lower taxes. The road system, the education system, we're really kind of starting to slide back on a lot of those services. And those services are fundamental to the state's economy. But can we be more effective and more efficient in terms of how we provide these services? I think that's a very good question, and there's a very long answer to that question.
Well, Gary in Iron River is also concerned about seeing more of a tax burden during Governor Evers in that sense. And in the State of the State address last week, Governor Evers said that fixing the economy remains a priority. After that, Republican Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald gave his response in an interview with the MacIver Institute.
Bill after bill. The work that we did, the Republican legislature with Governor Walker, we did correct the ship and put everything back on track here, and we're in great shape.
Can we measure the effect that Republicans and former Governor Walker's administration had on the economy?
I think you can. One way to, if you look at it in terms of jobs and unemployment and whatnot, it seems as though some of those policies worked out. But if you look at it in terms of people moving into the state, how many folks are actually finding Wisconsin attracted enough to move here? And we're not seeing that. This whole discussion about brain drain, it's really that we don't have a brain gain, is that people are not moving into the state. And the question is, why is that? And there's been a fair amount of research out there, and a lot of it has to do with the services that we've been cutting. People value good education systems. They value good police protection, fire protection, good roads, and natural amenities protections. And those are the types of things that we have been cutting back on. So if you look at it from terms of just net migration, I would say that those policies have not really panned out.
Let's go to Jeff now, joining us from the Green Bay area. Jeff, hi.
Hello. I believe Wisconsin was on the right track. A lot of things were getting fiscally set into place where we could actually start to reinvest properly back into some of those things your guest was just talking about, the education and whatnot. But what I think what we're going to see is that you can see already through Tony Evers, the increased spending is going to lead to increased taxes, and I think that that's going to lead to, at the very least, a slowing, if not a grinding halt to Wisconsin's economy. It's going to be something very, very much the opposite of what we saw when President Trump was elected and the market took off and the economy really started going. It's going to be the exact opposite here in Wisconsin.
Well, two things. One is that the economy was recovering pretty strongly under the previous administration. A lot of the growth that we're seeing under the current administration is primarily a continuation of that trend. So I'm not sure that I'd connect those dots in that particular way. The second thing is that are we going to be, with the new governor, are we going to be seeing tax increases? I think the Republicans, controlling the Senate and the Assembly, is not going to allow any large tax increases. I think, if anything, what we may see is a shifting in how our taxes are collected. We may see changes in income tax law. We may see changes in certain elements of the tax law. So the net increase will probably be minimal, if anything at all, because Republicans won't allow it. But if there are shifts in it, you may find that some people are paying a little bit more and others are paying a little bit less.
Well, shifting to agriculture now, how did Wisconsin's agriculture industry hold up last year, and what do you see in 2019 here?
Not good. Agriculture is in a very difficult period right now. And there's actually a forum today looking at the future of agriculture here on the campus. And the outlook is not particularly rosy. Is it going to get worse? I hope not. But there's no indication that it's going to be getting any better.
So what is at the heart of this? Is it the tariffs issue? Is it milk prices? What are you seeing there?
It's milk prices. It's a combination of a lot of things. And it was, I mean, we could say it's the tariffs. The tariffs, you know, are doing it. But the farm economy was struggling before the tariffs came into place. That was almost like icing on a bad cake. And part of the problem is that for the ag economy in Wisconsin to grow, we have to increase our exports. And that increase has not been occurring at the rate that we need. So when you put the tariffs on top of that, it was like icing on a bad cake.
So what regions of Wisconsin are best positioned to see economic growth this year? And do you have an eye on the Foxconn area in Racine?
I think areas of growth is probably going to see a good tourism economy. I think that that's going to be good for the state of Wisconsin. I think that there are certain sectors, computer software development, biotechnology. We see some real pockets of that. But the problem is that that's all kind of geographically located in some of the Milwaukee suburbs and Madison. So those areas are going to be doing okay. Foxconn, we could do a whole show on Foxconn. I'm still of a mindset that a lot of the economic benefits of Foxconn are going to flow over the Illinois state line. How much of that flow, this is where you can get economists and we can all agree, yes, some of the benefits are going to flow to Illinois. How much? How many economists do you have in the room?
Well, let's squeak in a last call here. Vern and Boyd with an observation on the economy. Vern, go ahead very quickly.
Oh, good morning. Yeah, I'm from the old school. Full employment to me is one person working 40 hours a week with a wife, with three kids, with the ability to support them, with medical care, and the average wage should actually be $35 an hour to be even with 1972.
Well, Vern paints a picture there. What do you see, Steve Deller?
I think that hasn't been necessarily the case for the last 30 or 40 years. And I think that goes back to my earlier comments that a lot of the jobs that we're generating tend to be lower paying jobs. I've worked in some rural communities where the, you know, where they will say that, hey, these jobs we're generating are paying $13 an hour. And then and they're excited by that. And then you say, okay, well, what's the cost of living in this community? And suddenly you see a very big disconnect. So the idea of Vern's kind of view kind of has gone away.
Well, in the last 10, 15 seconds, as you look in your crystal ball, you have numbers coming out week by week. What are you watching?
I'm looking at interest rates. I'm looking at what's called the yield spread. And what this is a comparison between short-term interest rates and long-term interest rates. There aren't many economic laws, really, but this one, if short-term interest rates get higher than long-term interest rates, we're going into a recession and we're headed that way.
Steve, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Steve Deller is a professor and community development economist in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics at UW-Madison and UW-Extension. Up next, it's news. Then we talk about weird parenting wins with the author of a new book about imaginative ways to parent. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Here is the deal. What may work for one parent may not work for another, but it's worth a shot. We're talking about a new collection of parenting hacks and the creative journey of bringing up kids on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're digging out of parenting ruts or getting some possible solutions we can at least laugh about together. And nothing is off the table, like having a toast to broccoli. That just may be the thing that gets them to take a bite. Cheers. Do you have a weird parenting win that you want to share? 800-642-1234 is the number. What have you experienced that you never read about in parenting books? Is there anything you wish you would have known before having kids? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Hillary Frank is creator, executive producer, and former host of the parenting podcast, The Longest Shortest Time. She is also a contributor to This American Life and a young adult author. Her new book is called Weird Parenting Wins, Bathtub Dining, Family Screams, and Other Hacks from the Parenting Trenches. Hillary, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start by talking about your podcast, The Longest Shortest Time. You started the show about a decade ago after you had an extremely difficult labor with your daughter and a birth injury that led to chronic pain. And here you are talking about that in 2014.
Some people wonder, why can't women just let their birth stories go? It's in the past. Get over it. Move on. But the thing is, when your birth story is traumatic, it doesn't just have an impact on the day your child is born. It has an impact on your mothering. It has an impact on your feeling of self-worth, your sex life, your relationship with your partner, maybe for as long as you live.
Hillary, what kind of response did you get from your listeners after talking so openly about your own experience with childbirth?
There was just an amazing outpouring from the audience of people saying, yes, you know, I've never heard anyone talk about this so honestly, and it really speaks to my experience. You know, even if people didn't have exactly the same experience as me, they had some kind of experience that they weren't warned about. Or, I mean, just even, like, told, you know, things could possibly go wrong. And I think there's, like, a real shroud of secrecy around childbirth. So people were excited to hear honesty around this topic.
Well, you've been writing about this, how there is this shroud of secrecy and that, you know, perhaps physicians and the people in the medical community don't really listen well enough to what new mothers are saying. Are you feeling that?
Absolutely. And I mean, I'm even hearing from obstetricians that they're not really necessarily trained in postpartum care as well as they might like to be. You know, they're trained for childbirth, and a lot of them don't even know about some of the remedies that are available, like pelvic floor physical therapy, which is, you know, a proven technique to help women after childbirth.
And we're going to get a better connection with you here. We're talking with Hillary Frank. She is the creator, executive producer, and former host of the parenting podcast, The Longest Shortest Time. Her new book is called Weird Parenting Wins, and we truly want to hear yours. What is your parenting win? What do you try for your kids that have paid off, and what did your parents do? The number to call is 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Perhaps it had something to do with sibling rivalry. Maybe it had something to do with how to get that child to sleep, or you drove around a lot in order to get that infant to fall asleep. What was your trick as you raised a kid and some creative ways you hooked them on eating a meal when they wouldn't eat? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Tom now, joining us from Madison. Tom, hi.
Good morning.
What is your weird parenting win?
Well, my daughter, she loved berries of all kinds, blueberries and raspberries, and you know, we had raspberry patch by the house, and I told her that peas were green berries. And to this day, she loves peas.
How did that go over? I mean, what, did she go there with you?
She sure did.
I love it. Hillary, what do you think of that?
I love that. You know what? That reminds me of another one that we have in the book, of a mom who puts peas in a Pez dispenser, frozen peas, and the kid will eat them out of the Pez dispenser.
So, Hillary, with, you know, putting frozen peas in a Pez dispenser, that's pretty out there. And, you know, as parents, we look at that and we're like, yeah, well, that's for that other parent to do. What about judgment? Where does judgment come in as we look at all of these wacky ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that parenting media really promotes, is like this idea that there's one side or another of every parenting issue, and they sort of want parents to clash because it makes headlines more clicky. But I think that actually parents don't really want to be judging each other. You know, we're at a really vulnerable in our time in our lives when we become parents, and I think what we want is support. And I think that what I've learned is that the stuff that has worked for me and the stuff that's worked for people I know is things that we've developed, you know, in moments of desperation and through trial and error. And so I actually think that people enjoy the weirdness, because it's sort of like when it works, you feel like you're mastering parenthood in that one moment.
Well, there are so many parenting books out there and lots of parenting gurus who know just the right formulas. You read all the books. Did that help?
No. When I first became a parent, I read a lot of books about how to soothe, how to get your kid to sleep, how to feed your kid, and sometimes the advice I was getting in those books would help. But when they didn't, I felt like I was failing at parenthood, and I think this is really common. I think, you know, a lot of these books are written from a prescriptive kind of my way or the highway perspective, and I don't find that that's helpful. I do find books helpful when they're like talking about developmental psychology and sort of understanding where your kid is coming from, but when they're so prescriptive, I don't find them very helpful.
And because when you understand what is happening underneath at all, that developmental psychology, perhaps you're more prone to going in creative directions to make situations become more manageable. And I'm thinking about the time you hit the slopes with your daughter, and that wasn't at all a situation that was fun when it was supposed to be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a skier, so I took my daughter skiing one day because she had a friend who was going, and it turned out to be the most popular ski day of the year. We didn't know that it would be, and we wound up waiting for skis for hours in the cold. And of course, you know, I had like a six-year-old, and she was going out of her mind, and she was whining, and I was starting to feel like she was getting not just annoying to me, but annoying to the people around us. And so I thought, all right, I got to do something here. I can't just keep saying stop whining. And so I told her that if she was going to whine, she had to sing the blues. So I taught her how to sing the blues.
I like how you oftentimes circle back to music, and especially when you need your privacy time in the bathroom, you're able to find a way, a distraction, so that you can even just have 2 seconds to go to the bathroom.
Yes. I mean, I think that's pretty common. I see a lot of pictures on Instagram of parents, like, from the point of view of, like, their knees. They're on the toilet with their kids, like, hanging onto their knees. We got a lot of strategies around that. One of my favorites is that there's this mom who sends her toddler with a roll of toilet paper to her room and goes and instructs the kid to TP her room. And then the kid has to roll it back up, too, so it's a little extra time.
But potty training, that is a touch-and-go area, and no kid does it the same, and I can vouch for that. So what are some tips there that were super practical that we can try?
Yeah, so there's one mom who gets a drop of blue food coloring and puts it in the potty and tells her kid to make goblin pee because the pee turns the blue food coloring green.
I like that. That's got to be a science family. All right. Yeah.
So there's one mom who like takes a picture of the poop in the potty. It sounds pretty gross, but like then they send it to she sends it to her husband, and then the kid gets very excited. There's a lot of pride around that. One of the more disgusting ones is something that a babysitter invented called pee soup, where she gets all of the kids in the house to go one after another in the toilet without flushing, and they, like, pretend they're making some kind of soup. They, like, add the ingredients, and then when they flush, it gets all mixed together.
You know, that really speaks to, though, the psychology of it all, of, you know, creative ways that the kids are learning and exploring, because a lot of this is also exploration, in a sense, and answering the bigger questions in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, a lot of it for me feels like it's about making parenting more playful. And that's a book I really like, Playful Parenting by Lawrence Cohen. And so many of these techniques that parents have discovered for themselves are about, like, tricking kids into playing when they're actually trying to get them to do something important.
Hillary Frank gathered parenting advice from parents themselves, and it could get a bit off the wall at times, but it's scalable for sure, and it's not from parenting gurus. She is the creator of the parenting podcast, The Longest Shortest Time. Her new book is called Weird Parenting Wins. We want to hear yours at 800-642-1234. Tell us about a time you felt stuck or at your wit's end with parenting, and then you had a stroke of genius and got unstuck. Have you found some tricky, fun ways to get them to eat vegetables, get dressed, or deal with a goodbye at daycare that can be so hard? We're at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation in a moment on the Ideas Network.
In WPR weather, a wind chill warning goes into effect tonight through Thursday at noon. Partly to mostly cloudy today, windy, scattered flurries, highs from zero to the low single digits with wind chills of 30 to 50 below zero late in the day. Wednesday, partly to mostly sunny, some flurries, windy and dangerously cold, highs from the negative teens to the negative single digits and wind chills of 40 to 50 below zero. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Up next, we check in on warming centers that have opened up across the state as the governor declares a state of emergency in response to the extreme cold. That's coming up on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about parenting wins. One aha moment I had in putting infant twins to sleep is that our cat would slip into the dark room where we'd be standing next to the crib, swaying back and forth, doing that sleep dance each evening. And the cat would so elegantly jump up on the crib rail and pace back and forth, rubbing her back against the baby's backs. And while it might not have put them to sleep instantly, it did demonstrate that we're not the only ones who know secrets to calming infants. What is your parenting aha moment? Parents of teens, do you have any sneaky ways of getting your teen to open up to you or tell you what's going on in their life? What parenting success have you had? 800-642-1234. Hillary Frank stays with us. Her new book is called Weird Parenting Wins: Bathtub Dining, Family Screams, and Other Hacks from the Parenting Trenches. Let's go to Eric leading us off in Green Bay. Hi, Eric.
Hi. When I was younger and I babysat two little munchkins, and they were Beelers. And for them, I couldn't get them to do anything. And so then I figured out an idea. I says, well, you know, I know Santa personally, and I have his phone number. And if you don't do what I tell you to do, I'm going to give him a call. And every time they would be, you know, a little bit rambunctious, I would pick that phone up, and I would say, I'm calling Santa. And they would immediately do whatever I told them to do.
I love it. Hillary, what about Santa and dealing with rowdy kids?
I mean, I think so. There's a lot of like white lies in this book. That was a big trend among like the younger set of children. So the Santa example reminds me of another one where when kids are being really rowdy at a restaurant, there was one mom who told her kids, being loud is screaming is illegal at restaurants. And see that guy over there? He's an undercover cop. Just, like, pick some random guy at the restaurant.
And you have a line to the Tooth Fairy. Speaking of Santa, in terms of sibling rivalry, what did you do about the Tooth Fairy?
So I had an evil twin when I was a kid, and her name was Leslie. And you could tell when I was Leslie because I had squintier eyes, or so my brother thought. He's 6 years younger than me. And I, when he lost a tooth one day, I stayed up late, waited for my parents to go to bed, and I wrote him a note from the Bloody Fairy instead of the Tooth Fairy, because I guess he had lost a lot of blood with this one tooth. And I took the money and his tooth from under his pillow and just told him, like, too bad. When you lose a lot of blood, when you've lost a tooth, you get the Bloody Fairy, not the Tooth Fairy. My parents weren't happy with me.
No, that is pretty evil. So what do you do about sibling rivalry?
So with sibling rivalry, there's a lot of creative techniques parents use. There is one that I love where the mom grounds her children from playing with each other, and then they always find like some creative way to break the rule and start playing with each other. There's when like everyone's going crazy at home, there's a mom who decides to throw the family's unbirthday, and they like make each other cards and they bake a cake. And it sort of like changes the mood in the house.
I love that. Let's go to Sarah now, joining us from Appleton. Sarah, go ahead.
Yeah, I have two. One is about food and one's about the potty training. My daughter, we would have like box mac and cheese, and she loved it. And I thought, I'm going to make homemade mac and cheese because it's, you know, the box stuff isn't healthy. And so I made the mistake of calling it that, though, when she asked what was for supper. And she hated it because it wasn't like what she was used to. So I waited a couple months and I made it again. And she asked what was for supper. I said cheesy noodle casserole, and she loved it. So I just had to come up with a different name for it.
A different name did the trick. Hillary, what about naming things?
Yes, this is a big one. So there's a mom who was tired of cooking chicken, and her kids only wanted chicken, and so she decided to create a new dish called French chicken, but it was actually pork chops. And then there's a mom who even, like, her kid decided he only liked takeout. And so she snuck home some takeout containers from when they went out for Chinese food. And she made homemade food, but put it in the takeout containers and told them, oh, we're having takeout.
Whatever works. Let's go to Jesse in Green Bay now. Jesse, hi.
Good morning. My kids are little, so I don't have teens yet, but I have two nieces who both were struggling with some of those teenage years and some of the transitions. So what I started doing with them is we started a journal. It's a notebook where I write to them, and then they get to write back to me. And I promise not to share anything unless they ask me to. But they get to ask questions, and I'll do my best to answer. And I just feel like it takes that, like, awkward face-to-face conversation out of some of the things that they need to talk about.
Jesse, thank you. Hillary, what about those awkward face-to-face conversations among teens?
Yes, this is another big one. So I love this example, and it reminds me of one that a stepmom used with a stepdaughter who was not wanting to communicate with her, and she bought a journal and wrote a letter to the stepdaughter and invited her to write back, and it started this, like, nonverbal writing communication between them. And there's a lot of stuff like this where parents are sort of, like, tricking their kids into talking to them. Things like a mom who stays up doing a jigsaw puzzle when her kids are out late. And then when they come back, she doesn't ask them anything. They just sit down and start doing the puzzle, and they start spilling their guts.
That's brilliant. Or the parent who has the sex conversation on their way to a venue when the kid is in the back seat of the car.
And yeah, no eye contact.
No eye contact, right. Let's go to Patrick in Madison. Patrick, hi.
Hi, good morning. One thing we did with my son was we told him carrots were treats. No, you can only have a couple of those, you know. And he would ask for them in his lunch. Okay, yeah, you know, we'll make sure we put some in your lunch. And one time the neighbor lady called up and said, what have you done to your kid? He's over here begging for carrots.
Oh, my goodness. Hillary, we perhaps put different things in the limelight, and they have a different currency, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, I got my daughter to eat lettuce by showing her the very first SNL digital short, which is called Lettuce. And it's like Andy Samberg and Will Forte, like, commiserating over, it sounds like, a friend who died. And then in the middle of this heavy conversation, they're taking giant chomps of an iceberg lettuce. And I showed my daughter this video, and it made her just, like, beg me for lettuce.
I love it. Leslie Ann called in, couldn't stay with us. When she was breastfeeding her second child, her first child would always interrupt, wanting attention. So she created a chest of things that were for only playing with, and it made that nursing time special. What about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of this, of making things more special than they seem. There's a mom who called for fancy dinner with her son. He was able to spot veggies mixed into his food, and so she would tell him, "We're having fancy dinner," and then she would bring out all the, like, china and the crystal goblets and turn down the lights and put on candles, and then he could never see the spinach mixed into his marinara.
Well, very quickly, as we wrap up, this is such a special period in life. It is so quick, and there are so many challenges. What can you leave us with?
I mean, I think that parents need to trust their intuition a little bit more. I think we're sort of trained to think that the experts hold all of the answers and that we can only find parenting techniques in manuals. But I want, in this book, I think I wanted to collect a parental brain trust, not just for examples that parents could actually use, but to encourage parents to trust their own intuition as well.
Hillary Frank, the new book is called Weird Parenting Wins. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Hillary Frank is creator, executive producer, former host of the parenting podcast, The Longest Shortest Time. She's also a contributor to This American Life and a young adult author. Her new book is called Weird Parenting Wins, Bathtub Dining, Family Screams, and Other Hacks from the Parenting Trenches. Just ahead, fans of the Milwaukee Brewers are no stranger to Miller Park, the team's home field. But starting in 2021, the stadium will have a new name. We will talk about that advertising. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.